Welcome back, everyone, to the Dear Taiwan podcast. My name is Teacher Joseph. Today, we will be continuing our map tour, this time visiting the sleepy southeastern county of Taidong, home to some pebble beaches, aboriginal villages, some outlying islands, and generally a more leisurely, laid-back pace of life, this time on the Dear Taiwan podcast. Welcome to Taidong. So transport to Taidong has always been a little bit difficult, and this point is made kind of clearly by the fact that there are plentiful domestic flights from Taipei to Taidong. It's about 40 minutes, but if one were to drive or take the train, there's a few hurdles to jump through. First of all, driving, you're going to pass by several difficult mountain roads before you can actually access the East Coast. So much so that it's actually easier to drive south from Taipei to Kaohsiung first, and then across this newly developed road network that links kind of southern Pingdong County across the mountains to Taidong County, then back north up to Taidong City. Also, the train on the East Coast was only finally built in the late 20th century because the mountains that separate Yilan to Hualien and also Kaohsiung to Taidong were just so difficult to penetrate through that this train is kind of a new development and was a bit of an engineering marvel at the time. Nevertheless, the difficulty in accessing Taidong, whether you're taking winding roads or a long train ride or a quick but somewhat expensive flight, shouldn't dissuade you from actually going here. It's quite charming. It's quite the contrast to a lot of other more urbanized and industrialized parts of the country. So starting from the south part, if you're coming over from Kaohsiung, you will cross the water divide on Route 9, which runs through Shizhi Township, Pingdong, and then over the hill, cresting to get a view of the ocean, on Route 9 down to Daren and Dawu Townships. Both of these townships are quite laid back, don't have a lot of stuff to do for the practical traveler, but there are beautiful views of the ocean, and Daren Township specifically would have any kind of infrastructure you need, assist your transport over this difficult road. There's a lot of gas stations and, you know, some rest stops and some restaurants as you get through Daren Township down towards the ocean. Now, on the ocean, I mean, this is the most beautiful part of the county, in my opinion. The Route 9 continues northwards towards Taidong City. It's right on the ocean. It is literally right on the ocean. You have a mountain to your left, the ocean to your right. It is blue beyond belief. And the layers of blue, the different blue coloration of the ocean is evident based off the kind of ground below it, whether it's a reef, whether it's the drop-off, or whether it's close to shore. So you'll see like almost a painting on the ocean's surface. And as the coast runs very, very straight, you'll get views in every direction. And one of my favorite memories of taking a look out towards the ocean is like, you can see so far that you see different weather farther out. You'll see like a storm system lingering off in the ocean, whereas right above you, the weather's fully different. So heading north on Route 9, again for these beautiful views, there's actually some camping in Nanxing Village, which is a Paiwan Aboriginal village in Dawu Township, Taidong. And you can visit Paiwan House, which is the English name on Google Maps. And the owner of this camping site and Aboriginal kind of cultural immersion center speaks English. Stop by if you are in the area. You can drive up the dirt road to get to Balangwei Shan or Balangwei Mountain and camp on a mountaintop overlooking the ocean. And a few years ago, BBC actually wrote a piece about how this part of Taidong County was one of the top 10 places in the world to view the New Year's sunrise. And I mean, the sunrises here are just mind-blowingly beautiful. Going further north into Dawu Township, I always enjoyed stopping by the Dawu Coast Park because there's this kind of really cute kind of Tudigong temple that, I mean, just gets pelted by wind nonstop, basically. And you can stop by and visit this tiny temple against the ocean. There's a few small hiking trails just above Dawu Village And there's not much to do here at all, aside from just visit some place that has a more leisurely pace of life. Town to base yourself if you are to explore deep into nature in this southeastern part of the country. Oh, and I should also mention Jinglong Lake, or Golden Dragon Lake, was a really kind of adorable place to walk around. When I went there before, no one was there. You're just kind of lost there with the birds, with the insects, enjoying this really cute lake. As you're going further north, you will eventually get to Doliang Railway Station. So the whole deal with this railway station is it is, again, right on the ocean above the road. And from a viewing platform above the station itself, it looks like the train is driving on the ocean, kind of. So it's this really picturesque thing where the train kind of pops right out of the tunnel onto this very, very, very small station. And this station was actually taken out of service because it had low ridership, and this whole region kind of does. But then Instagram happened, and this place kind of got really popular as a place to visit, and now it's a tourist attraction. They do run limited train journeys to this station, but it's not fully in service. But there's some artists' shops just above the station. There's some really good Aboriginal barbecue restaurants and a cafe to get, you know, sweeping views of the ocean below, as well as trains that are kind of coming through. Just north of Doliang Station is the first kind of main town. I know I said that Dao was a town, but it's really small. This next stop, called Jinduan, which is part of Taimali Township, is famous for some hot springs nearby. And there's actually this really, really breathtakingly beautiful Catholic church, which is fully done up in traditional Paiwan Aboriginal architecture and design, similar to the one in Utai, but much more open to the public. And you'll see a lot of wood, dark gray slate rock work on the outside, a lot of traditional wood carvings and wooden statues of Paiwan warriors and family members, of course the traditional Catholic Jesus on a cross on the inside, but this place really is an architectural marvel. A little bit of a shame that they redid part of the Route 9 road on this big bridge just outside Jinduan village that diverted traffic away from this kind of downtown center, that this church might get fewer visitors. Anyway, heading further north in Taimali, this is the beach you really want to kind of stop at. You really want to stop at what's labeled as Millennium Dawn Memorial Park, because while this is a pebble beach, it is possibly the longest beach in all of Taiwan, definitely on the east coast, because as you look to your left and right with the ocean in front of you, the beach just seems to kind of continue on for miles. And eventually there will be a break when you reach Taidong City, and the waves are quite rough. You can't really swim out here. But just in terms of nature, going from mountain to ocean, this place is not to be missed. And Taimali is also famous not only for this beautiful beach, but if you drive up the mountain, there's tons of daylily farms. It's a flower, it's orange, it's edible, it's often used in soup here in Taiwan, specifically chicken soup, and people love to drive up these really kind of dangerous winding mountain roads in their cars and enjoy seeing these scenes of hills covered by orange flowers. Expect a bit of traffic. So that's Taimali, Dao, and Daren in a nutshell in the southern part of Taidong County. As you enter what is the only kind of flat plains area of Taidong County, there's quite a lot of archaeology that has been done in the area, and they've unearthed some remnants of the Beinan civilization before there were any kind of modern migrations to what is now the island of Taiwan. There was quite a lot of evidence of a previous civilization living on this part of, well, this part of Asia. This could have even been before the Ice Age had ended. There's the Museum of Prehistory just outside Taidong City, kind of towards the south of the city. That's worth seeing because the only two places that I know of that they had archaeological evidence of a previous civilization is Taidong down here, and also Bali up in to the north of Taipei. They found a lot of artifacts. Found a lot of artifacts of a stone, bronze, and Iron Age culture. But before we get into Taidong City, I skipped something by accident. Ziben National Forest Recreation Area. So Ziben means origin of wisdom. And in this river valley, just to the south of Taidong City, there is some really high-quality hot springs to be had. Some kind of fancy and budget hot spring hotels that you could visit. And a forest recreation area that's actually really a great place to go hiking. Sure, it's taken care of by the forestry authority, and it kind of has more of an education bent, but it is quite steep, and there's a lot of different kind of tree ecosystems to hike through. And I went here on my first scooter trip around Taiwan, and it took a good 3 hours to hike through, to be honest. This area also was devastated by the Typhoon Morakot that I mentioned in the Pingdong episode. And, I mean, viewer beware, there's some shocking videos of hotels just being knocked over and decimated and just turned to rubble in the river below during Typhoon Morakot. But it was rebuilt. There's some hot spring activity and hot spring tourism to be had in the area. Again, quite nice as it offers hiking and relaxation. And it's not too far from a second train station just outside of Taidong City called Ziben Station. So the transport links, again, though it's far, it's not logistically complicated. If one were to hike deep into the Ziben River Valley on some kind of trails that are a bit more wild and less so maintained, you could theoretically hike all the way through past some ancient Rukai villages and get back to Utai or back to Majia Township in Pingdong. But this is kind of sacred ancient grounds, so you'd have to respect the wishes of the tribe and kind of ask their permission. It would take a number of days, though. I'll end by saying that there are quite a lot of ancient and old-growth tree groves in this area. Some of Taiwan's rarest species of trees, notably the Formosan cypress, false cypress, and probably the Formosan pine also grows in this area. So we're talking 2,000-year-old trees that they don't publish on maps here to kind of preserve their, well, both their longevity, but also to kind of make them harder to find. They're in this part of the country, and a hiker would stumble across them. Just don't be a mountain rat. All right, over to Taidong City. It's a city of about 100,000. It has an airport. But it is also kind of nondescript and acts just as a way to base yourself for this area. There's not a whole lot to actually do in downtown Taidong City. It is famous for Mee Tai Mu, which is a kind of noodle that's a bit chewier and thicker than any kind of common noodle in Chinese or Japanese cuisine. I've also heard it translate as silver needle noodles, but apparently this dish also has a lot of connection to Indonesia, so I'm not sure if that's actually a really accurate translation. Anyway, there's the famous Mee Tai Mu noodle shop downtown. There's always a huge line outside. It's pretty good. The night markets over here are, again, kind of smaller. There is a pretty cool kind of arts park area nearby the old train station called the Railway Art Village, which is next to the Tiehua Music Village. And there's an arts market on the weekends with a lot of kind of really high-end handicrafts. Local artists would sell some kind of wood carvings or some kind of jewelry here too. It was really kind of nice to explore, and there's some cafes there as well. There's not a whole lot to see specifically in Taidong City itself. It's just a great place to base yourself to explore the further area. I should mention the Taidong White House. The whole story with this is this is a ramshackle building thrown together by this guy who was a retired soldier and didn't have a lot of income. And he basically built up this house with things he found, kind of, and poured his own concrete and really kind of roughed it in a way. This is right by the ocean side, by the port. I mean, praise him for effort. He passed away a few years ago. But it is comical how this thing still stands. It clearly looks like some guy just made this by hand. Crooked piping, things sticking out the top. It looks like it's about to fall over. And when you have nothing, you gotta be industrious. A lot of the plywood or the woodwork is all just kind of not cut right. Some are pieces are rotten. A lot of the window panes are from abandoned windows he found, so they're all kind of like facing the wrong way. And there's some brickwork on the top for what, I'm not entirely sure. Anyway, it's really kind of cool, and I hope that it does stand, not necessarily into perpetuity, but like for years to come. You will hear people complain about Taidong, how they moved the train line out of the city, and they did because they had to connect it to the Southern Link line as it went onwards to Kaohsiung. See, originally the Hualien to Taidong train was totally separate. There was no way to actually build a train line between Yilan and Hualien, and then to Kaohsiung and Taidong. So when they actually figured out a way to connect the two, they had to reroute the train out of Taidong City itself. So the train station is, again, kind of far from the town. That's about all I have to say about Taidong City. Again, it's a good place to base yourself. There's a university, there's a few art museums, but they're all kind of local. There's that railway art village that's totally a worthwhile place to stop at. Oceanside parks where there's occasionally like some events there. But the real beauty of Taidong County is out of this city. So continuing to head north from Taidong City, you have two options. You have the Coastal Road, which is Route 11, and the East Rift Valley Road, which is still Route 9, which runs on this valley between the Central Mountains to the East Coast Mountains, which is a much shorter range, and has three different river sections cutting through it. So headed inland from Taidong City up the East Rift Valley, you have two choices, the Route 9 or the more mountainous Route 197, the latter of which goes just above some really bizarre rock formations on the river that drains just to the north of Taidong City. Kind of worth a quick look, but again, the road is quite windy. Up Route 9, you'll pass by a number of, well, of all things, cow farms. In fact, though Taiwan has a very, very small dairy consumption rate compared to a lot of Western countries, there is quite a bit of milk production in this area, most notably in the Chulu area of the Luye Township. Further up Route Number 9, before you get into the Luye Township, which has Luye Highlands, which we'll get back to in a second, it might be worth it to stop by the Bunong Bulo Xiuxi Nongchang in technically in Yanping Township. Yanping Township is almost exclusively mountainous and kind of a nominal home to the Bunong Aboriginal peoples. And at this kind of tourist cultural park, you can get introduced to some traditional Bunong cultural festivals, food, stone carvings, sculptures, and ways of life. I haven't been, but it's been on my list for quite a while because while the artwork looks quite cool, it's nice to kind of traipse around kind of a more outdoorsy building complex, get some great mountain views as you have some traditional food. The Bunong Aboriginals are known to be some of the fiercest warriors and hunters back in the day in Taiwan, and still routinely would hunt in the high mountain regions of the country. Stepping away from the Bunong Tribe Experiential Village in Yanping Township, just a hop over a stream, you get to Luye Township, which is famous island-wide for the Luye Gaotai, or Luye Plateau, where they have parasailing, paragliding, a whole lot of kite flying, the annual hot air balloon festival. Expect some traffic if you visit this area anytime around the annual Hot Air Balloon Festival because the tourists go completely bananas for this site. Luye has more than the Gaotai. It actually is an old Hakka town with a lot of quaint Hakka rice farms and those old Hakka buildings. There's a bit of an argument whether or not they're truly genuine cultural interpretations of older Hakka buildings in China, but they're short houses with white and light blue painted fronts and columns to each side. You'll see a lot of them in the area, and it's also a popular place to rent bikes. Further north from Luye, passing by a bunch of rice farms, you will eventually get to Guanshan and later Chishang, the latter meaning on the pond. I guess in the same way we think of Iowa for corn, Taiwanese think of Guanshan and Chishang for rice. Organic rice farmed in the traditional way, sometimes from, back in the day. some really good quality crops here, and a lot of Taiwanese love renting bikes and biking around rice fields, because if you grow up in the big city, you don't kind of get that experience very much. Please do stop by Qishang for a lunchbox. Qishang has its own kind of bento set lunchbox, or biendang as it's called in Taiwan, with organic rice, blanched vegetables, a lot of which are similar to collard greens in the West, but they're local vegetables as well. Several different varieties of meat, sausage, pork chop, chicken, shrimp rolls. The biggest difference between a Qishang lunchbox and like a more kind of conventional lunchbox across the island is that you get unlimited vegetables and multiple kinds of meat on organic rice. But if you're not interested in a kind of a lunchbox, I get it. It's fine. But you're missing out. The Dapuo Pond, which is the pond that Qishang is named for, is quite lovely to bike around, but a lot of people come here for Mr. Brown Road. In this commercial advertising coffee in Taiwan, like a kind of similar to the way we have like Folgers in America, you have Mr. Brown in Taiwan. There was this commercial featuring this famous actor sipping some Mr. Brown coffee under this tree on this road, which went through rice fields here in Qishang. And now it's a tourist attraction, Bolang Da Dao, where you can rent a bike and be like this actor in this coffee commercial, where you can be below this standalone tree among all these rice fields to the same extent of like, you know, the Beatles at Abbey Road. Everyone wants to go to Abbey Road and walk on the crosswalk. Everyone wants to go to this random road through rice fields and sit by this tree. It's kind of charming, honestly. It's kind of charming. And that actor's name, of course, is Takeshi Kaneshiro. He's actually Japanese. Finished biking around Qishang and Guanshan townships on the East Rift Valley. There's one more spot in the valley to mention in Taidong County, and that is up the mountain in Haiduan Township. Route 20 used to connect Kaohsiung and Taidong through the mountains, through the southern part of Yushan National Park, Jade Mountain National Park. The road has been closed for, I don't know, decades now. They keep trying to rebuild it. They keep running into problems. I mean, you're having a high mountain road spanning a national park with steep river gorges below. I get why it gets closed when typhoons come. But Route 20 goes up Haiduan Township and passes by some really kind of interesting sites as well. Firstly, in the village of Ulu, it's an Aboriginal village, for some reason, it has Russian cannons. The Japanese, when they were trying to exert control over this part of Taiwan, because I should have said before, actually, back when Taiwan was controlled by the Qing Dynasty, it wasn't until the 1870s that Governor Liu Mingchuan tried to get Han settlers to go over to what is now Taidong to kind of settle and occupy the land. It took that long. Taidong is probably the most untouched part of Taiwan by Chinese or Japanese colonial powers, if you want to interpret it that way. So as the Japanese tried to exert control over the Aboriginals for only a very brief amount of time, had interacted with what they perceived as foreign invaders or residents, the Japanese brought some Russian cannons that were caught in the Russo-Japanese War. Not caught, captured. And they plopped them right down above Ulu Village. And they still have the Cyrillic lettering on the barrel of the cannon. And they're the original ones. They're still left there kind of to represent a sad part of the history of this village. I'd be really curious to know what the locals think of them. They're still there. Just north of Ulu Village, which is very picturesque, you can kind of walk around, but there's not a whole lot to do. You have Lisong Hot Springs. This hot spring, I should enunciate that better. You have Lisong Hot Springs. This hot spring, this wild hot spring, is absolutely beautiful. It's about a 45-minute hike down from the road, steep down with ropes into the river below. And this hot spring, the minerals coming out of the plumes have caked emerald-colored rock formations onto the walls, the cliff walls. And you have to kind of hop through the river about 5 minutes, maybe less, from where the trail ends. People have set up basic sand formations, kind of boxing in some of the hot water. And this is really, really hot, by the way. Like, some spots are boiling, this kind of natural volcanic hot spring activity in the river. You can enjoy the hot springs. Please be very, very careful. People have drowned here because the river current is quite strong. They went here in bad weather. If you take your necessary precautions, you can enjoy a hot spring in a river, wild hot spring, with amazingly colored emerald green rock formations on the cliff because of the hot spring activity. It's about a 45-minute hike down, which means it's a little bit longer to get back up. It's worth it as a destination with adequate precautions. The last thing to mention on the Route 20 as it snakes through the mountains of Haiduan Township before the road eventually closes is Xiangyang Forest Recreation Area. You actually might encounter traffic this far up because people are coming here to hike to Jiaming Lake, Taiwan's highest and or largest alpine pond. There's not many in the country. On a mountain ridge, between a few of the Baiyue peaks, you have this angel teardrop pond. It fills and evaporates through successive rains. You'll see a lot of deer visiting this pond as a water source. And it is a very, very, very popular, very, very, very beautiful hike. It takes at least 2 days to hike up and then hike back down, because you're going to start at the trailhead at about 2,200 meters and ascend all the way up to at least 3,400 meters before you get to the pond itself. It's a bit competitive to get a permit for this pond hike because, I mean, it's drop-dead gorgeous. People want to go visit it. And you will pass two of the Baiyue on your way there, Xiangyang Mountain and Sancha Mountain. If you do go, don't leave trash. There's been issues with trash piling up at this pond. If you do go, good luck getting a cabin. And if you do go, let me know how it is. I have not yet gone because, again, as I said in the beginning of this episode, getting from Taipei to Taidong, it's not always the easiest, not always the fastest, but in the future. So that's the East Rift Valley portion of Taidong County. So what about the coast? Well, if you're going to access the coast, you're going to have to kind of go back to Taidong City or further north into Hualien. While the East Coast Mountains or Hai'an Mountain Range are nowhere near as tall as the Snow Mountain Range or the Central Mountain Range, they're still nothing to shake a stick at. They're actually quite steep and tough to build roads through. So back down to Taidong City, you're going to head north on Route 11 into what's called the Dulan Forest Area. Now, as far as I know, this is not like a National Forest Recreation Area or a national park, but most of this area right up against the ocean is forested. There's a few tourist spots on the main road, Jaduan, which has some interesting rock formations and a rest stop. There's some beaches that have some political strife with developing resort hotels, then the permit's revoked, and then it closes and it's left as an empty construction shell, and it gets reactivated again with a new construction company. I don't have time for that to go into detail here. I don't really know the full story, but there's some controversy with abandoned hotels on beaches in this part of Taidong. It's sad, but it happens. There's also funny kind of campy water running upward illusion right before you get to the first big town of Dulan. Dulan is a gem. Dulan is beautiful. Dulan apparently means idiot in Taiwanese. It's a homophone for idiot. So this little quaint kind of surfer town set on a main road, the biggest souvenir here is a school bag, like a traditional kind of like newspaper boy's school bag that says Dulan Elementary School. That is a homophone for idiot elementary school. Something like that. It's a joke that someone told me. I could be totally wrong, but it's kind of funny. Dulan has a lot of hostels and fancy restaurants catering to like foreign tourists. It doesn't have a whole lot of like industry or any kind of big downtowns. It's just a few houses and hostels on this main road with a bunch of secret or unnamed surfing spots down some small roads from the main road. The surf here apparently is way safer and less choppy than in Thai Mali. And there's also a whole lot of artists' workshops here as well. The main central point of this village is the Dulan Sugar Factory Cafe and Art Gallery. It formerly was a sugar refining factory way back in the Japanese and KMT days, but it has been since reclaimed as a bunch of art galleries and some pop-up food truck kind of restaurants also are around there. It's totally worth stopping by. There's a lot of really beautiful wood carving artwork and Aboriginal artwork as well that's on display in this area. There's also the occasional concert. I saw this really talented singer-songwriter called Balai, who's of Paiwan ethnicity, give a great concert here at the Dulan Sugar Factory Cafe and Art Gallery. And you'll find a lot of Western surfing hippies living somewhat peacefully with the local Aboriginal and Han Chinese natives as they open up kind of high-end restaurants catering towards tourists from Taipei and surf the day away. There's also a bunch of forestry trails here, but they are really wild. And you can do some homestays in this area and stay in some really kind of cool and experiential camping areas, some of which are run by some Aboriginals who teach you kind of traditional bushcraft or hunting techniques as well. Not that you would actually be hunting for real, but they can teach you about it. So Dulan's another great place to base yourself, but they won't have the amenities for everything. I remember my first trip coming here on our first scooter trip around Taiwan, we packed very lightly. So every few days we had to do laundry. And we had it was only a 1 week trip, so like, you know, day in, day out we were going. At our hostel, we asked to do laundry, and then we noticed they don't have a dryer. And they're like, oh, just hang dry it. Like, well, we normally would, but we gotta go tomorrow morning pretty early. Like, oh man, if you want a dryer, you gotta go 40 minutes into Taidong City. Go to a proper laundromat. We're like, oh, okay. So we just did. Sleepy town. Further north from Dulan, you will pass by, again, a lot of small spots to kind of just admire the view. And the next big town is called Changgong, which is a fishing port town with not a whole lot of things to do aside from go shopping for the freshest fish in the whole country. But just north of that is San Shantai Arch Bridge. San Shantai is this really interesting island formation, which kind of is on some kind of rocky reefs that poked out into the ocean, kind of like a peninsula. But it's a peninsula only because of this kind of arch bridge that was built to connect the island to the mainland. Now, you could easily kind of walk on rocks in the water to get to the island, so it's not very like a peninsula that gets kind of covered when the tide comes in. But you can kind of hop and hike on these rocks on San Shantai Island itself, which has some of the most treacherous sidewalks I've ever actually kind of stepped on. You got to really watch the railing because it might just kind of fall off as you grip it. But San Shantai is beautiful, and everybody only walks on the bridge because the bridge has archways. Walk down the bridge, then go explore the island. No one's there. It's great. You'll see a lot of birds. You'll get views of the ocean around you 270 degrees. And yeah, there's some food spots just at the Tourist Information Center by San Shantai. But go back into Changgong. Get some local food. Don't spend your money on the overpriced tourist stuff. And expect some tour bus traffic, as this is kind of like a required stop on a lot of these like temple-organized tour bus trips for a lot of old people. But again, it's worth it. It's definitely worth it. Further north from Changgong and San Shantai, there's a lot of small fishing villages. You'll eventually enter Changbin Township, which is the poorest township in the entire country, but you wouldn't really kind of know it from looking around. You'll see a lot of named rock formations, for example, Rock Umbrella, Man Rock. Further south, you got Xiao Ye Liu. Just some kind of named rock formations that look kind of quirky and people like to take pictures of. If you keep going north, barreling through Changbin Township, you will eventually get to what's called the Baxiandong Archaeological Site, which there has been some archaeological evidence in these caves on early humans living in this part of Asia. But it's also been turned into a bit of a tacky Buddhist temple, and the archaeology is kind of playing second fiddle to like this temple built into a cave. So I've heard that it's not really worth stopping at. But then again, it's still a beautiful area. And if you haven't had enough of beautiful lookup points with mountains behind you and the ocean below you, with bizarrely shaped rocks with names, you have a lot more of the East Coast just to your north in Hualien. As you cross the border from Taidong into Hualien counties, from Changbin Township to Fengbin Township, you actually pass by the Tropic of Cancer mark. And we'll talk more about that in a later episode all about Hualien. There's actually two more places to mention in Taidong. A keen observer might note that I'm neglected to mention the Fugang Fishing Harbor just nearby Shaoyelio on the east coast. Well, I'm mentioning it now. Just to the north of Taidong City, you have the fishing harbor where you catch the boat to Green Island or Orchid Island. Some people call it a boat, others call it the Vomit Comet because it is so nauseating. It's about a 40-minute boat ride to Green Island and just over 2 hours to Orchid Island. These islands are very, very different in character and in history. Green Island is populated almost exclusively by Han Chinese descendants, and it was a former prison colony. It's smaller than Orchid Island, and arguably the coastline of the island itself is not as beautiful. But Green Island itself is famous for having one of the world's only saltwater hot springs. I think Taiwan, Japan, and Italy, the only countries in the world to have these. There is a hot spring and a hot spring kind of tourist building area to the south of the island where, yeah, it's volcanic plumes just at the ocean's edge, giving you a saltwater hot spring experience. You can rent a bike and circumnavigate Green Island in about just over an hour, but the roads do get quite kind of steep and hilly as you're going up and down. A lot of people would come here to do some kind of like diving tours on coral reefs, and it's said that sea turtles even do nest here. If we're doing justice to history, one of the most important things to do here and see here is the Green Island White Terror Memorial Park. I won't go so in depth on this episode about the history of this, but just know that from 1949, when Chiang Kai-shek moved from China to Taiwan, retreating his army, losing to the communists, to kind of quell any uprising, he set up a lot of restrictive policies, taking away people's freedoms. They were later to, known as the White Terror period history. If you were even suspected as plotting against the government, you could be locked up in jail or even killed. That's the very, very condensed history of that, but just know that a lot of people who were persecuted by the government, rightfully or wrongfully, were given life sentences in prison and brought to Green Island and lived in pretty terrible conditions up until the 1980s, some people. In a very, very short amount of time, this former political prison and its companion prison in Shindian in New Taipei City have been reopened as museums for people to kind of like make amends and learn about the past, and it's left fully intact. They don't sugarcoat what happened here. You will learn about day-to-day life as a prisoner or as a guard. You will see the facilities as they were built in the 50s and active until the 80s. You will learn about this very, very sad part of Taiwanese history. Almost similar to like the way you see propaganda painted into just random mountainsides in North Korea, you see it here too. Like random KMT, Chiang Kai-shek era slogans are painted everywhere, even into the hillside. It's definitely worth a visit. If you can't make it to Green Island, stop by the one in Shindian, in New Taipei City. Those are the two big draws to Green Island, the hot springs and the history. There's also a whole scheme to kind of reintroduce and, in a way, domesticate deer. There's a deer species that roams the island, and there's a small amount of deer meat production on the island here, You can get some deer jerky. One thing I noticed about Green Island, and it's probably a good thing in the long run, is that a lot of people have left, and I assume they left, like families have moved away and there's abandoned buildings. I assume they've left because, well, the past industry was a political prison. So you'll see a lot of like abandoned and crumbling buildings in the main two villages. But there's still tourism driving the economy here today. And one thing I should say also is that there are some ancient houses, which I was kind of surprised to stumble across. If you are on a bike and you go nearby Yeouzhou, you can see some really, really, really old, kind of crumbling, but still in pretty good shape, like Qing Dynasty era single-story houses made from like stone by hand. It's kind of cool to kind of be the only ones there wandering around these kind of 1800s era cottage houses nearby some abandoned temples as well. Sleeping Beauty Rock apparently has also crumbled. For a while, it did look like Sleeping Beauty's head. And of course, there's a Confucius Rock, because there's always a Confucius Rock. All right, last but not least, Orchid Island. So if Green Island is Han Chinese and political prisoners, Orchid Island is Aboriginals. The Aboriginal people of Orchid Island are more closely related to Northern Filipinos than any Aboriginal tribe on the mainland Taiwan, that is. And they're very, very famous for their ornately decorated, grafted together wooden canoes. They're painted red and white. They kind of have these sharp, pointy parts at the front and back. And again, grafted together with no nails. The people of the island are called the Tao people, and I'm probably butchering their pronunciation there. And they've kind of gone about their traditional way of life, less interrupted by encroaching powers, whether it's the Qing Dynasty, the Japanese, or the KMT authority later on. They are known to spend many of their days fishing in the early morning and evening when the flying fish are migrating or feeding kind of at that time. Their traditional dress, so far as I know, is just a loincloth, a kind of tied-up cloth as underwear, similar looking to Japanese sumo belts, but not exactly the same, only similar in shape. And fishing was their main source of livelihood. That is, nowadays, until kind of tourism kicked off. But even when I visited here in 2013, I really didn't see that many tourists, and there also, at that time, there was not even a 7-Eleven at all on the island itself. There is now. I remember talking to the local family that I was, we stayed at their bed and breakfast, and the husband was Tao Aboriginal, the wife was Han Chinese, Taiwanese, and they said like some of the struggles is like people leave Orchid Island for jobs on Taiwan and never come back. There's only junior high school on the island. There's no high school, so if you want to continue education, you gotta leave, right? Though the opportunities might be a bit fewer for these natives, their traditional culture has been very, very well preserved. So, what's there to do on this island itself? Well, just like Orchid Island, you can rent a bike or a scooter, drive all the way around it, and the coastline is beautiful beyond belief. The rocks here are much darker and almost conglomerate looking, different from like a shale rock that you would see on Taiwan Island itself. And they're in all these ornate formations. They all have names. Some are named after animals, some are named after people, some are named after fish. And they just kind of stick up like sculptures, like natural sculptures, taller than buildings. There's three main villages on the island itself. And a lot of these villages do have like the traditional boats just kind of resting on the coast that the natives would use in the morning and the evening. So take a picture of that if you get permission first. There's also a lot of diving and snorkeling tours. I remember going snorkeling here and catching some blowfish. That was kind of cool. Seeing a lot of tropical fish and coral reefs. There are some cold spring estuaries that run down. You can actually go crab fishing there. You can also barbecue on the beach or drive all the way up the main road to the lighthouse, which is run by the ROC military. You can't go in the lighthouse itself, but there's like kind of like a nice park around it. And the road is actually pretty narrow and winding and steep. You get amazing views. Even though there's not a lot of people here and there's not a huge tourism industry, there is a fair number of really good quality restaurants making some really good food if you can seek it out. And sometimes you'll get flying fish on the menu. Other times the tribes, they keep it for themselves. But it's often dried and salted, a bit chewy, quite strong, and really good. I had to think about it for a second. I haven't had it in a long time. Yeah, it's dry, chewy, salty, but it's really has a lot of substance. It's really kind of like filling. Talking about all this makes me really want to come back to Orchid Island. And when I come back in the years in the future, I hope that the one controversy has been kind of solved. Unfortunately, on the southern tip of the island, you have, well, a nuclear waste storage site. Taiwan has four nuclear power plants, three of which are in operation, all of which are supposed to be decommissioned in the future. And in the 80s and 90s, when they were developed, there wasn't really an adequate place to store nuclear waste domestically. And the compromise was made, at least on behalf of the central government, to try to store the nuclear waste the farthest place away from the most people as possible. And what that meant was on this island, quite remote island, off in the Pacific Ocean, 2.5 hours away from Taiwan. But of course, the native peoples of this island, though there's only about 4,000 of them, they have to live with this blight on their coast, day in, day out. And it might provide some jobs, but they've been campaigning against it for decades now. And time again, Taipower, the company, promises to relocate the nuclear waste this year, and then it's the next year, then it's after 5 years, and they still can't really find out an adequate solution. Now, I've long thought, why not just put the nuclear waste on Uqiao Island off China, which Taiwan controls, and there's basically no domestic population aside from soldiers. That would piss off China, and everything pisses off China. I don't know if that's kind of politically feasible. So I don't know what the solution will be. All I know is that it's still a bit of an issue, and a lot of Taiwanese, even Han Chinese Taiwanese on Taiwan, they know about this. They know about this controversy, and they hope that it will be solved because it's a little bit of a national embarrassment. Okay, ignoring the nuclear waste for now, Orchid Island is still a beautiful place that I highly recommend anybody to come, so long as you're not too many people. Don't bring a group of 30 people here because, we want to leave a light footprint in tourism here. If you come, be very respectful of the natives and respectful of their canoes. Tour a traditional Tao house, which is partially built into the ground, again, if you give permission. This is to kind of divert flood waters at high tide. Enjoy some flying fish, go snorkeling, and don't vomit on the boat if you can manage that on the boat ride over from Taidong. All right, that's Taidong County in a nutshell. A sleepy place with a lot of character. Harder to get to than most places on Taiwan, but all the more rewarding. Coming up next in our map tour series, Hualien.